Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsome and I'm here after the 1 week break to break down UFC Orlando. We've got 15 fights, so it might be a slightly longer podcast, but this is a really stacked UFC fight night event. So, you know, for an event that's not a pay-per-view, we've got a lot of good fights, some fun fights as well, some big names on the card. So I'm really looking forward to the event and I'm looking forward to getting into the breakdowns as well. But just before we do, as always, there is a Baze AI recap from our UFC prediction software from the last event, which was a couple of weeks ago now. And this recap has been up on our YouTube channel under the Baze AI playlist from last UFC event at UFC Vegas 65, which ended up being Nzechukwu versus Kutalaba. So if you are interested in the algorithms, in the advanced technology of the AI and the prediction software, then make sure you check that recap out. However, let's jump straight into the breakdowns because that's why you are all here, and we've got 15 fights to get through as well, so I'll try not to keep you guys too long. In the main event at UFC Orlando, we've got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson versus Kevin Holland, and I think that this is a fight where both fighters here are actually going to enjoy this stylistic matchup. I think it's probably fair to say that both fighters are sick of being matched up against wrestlers, guys that want to take them down and hold them down. Probably Stephen Wonderboy Thompson more than Kevin Holland at this point, because, you know, Thompson is on a two-fight losing streak, but those two fights have come against Gilbert Burns, who, again, just got that relentless wrestling going and has obviously got seriously world-class topside jiu-jitsu. And then you've got Bilal Muhammad, who is seemingly on the form of his career. It's the best we've ever seen him look lately as well. Again, last time out against Sean Brady, looked absolutely phenomenal. There was moments where he was a little bit hit and miss, but ultimately he came through in the end. And that was a fight coming off two wrestling performances that he had to strike against Sean Brady as well. So, like I said, there's no shame right now in Stephen Thompson losing against guys like Gilbert Burns and Bilal Muhammad. And Kevin Holland, for as fun and as good as Kevin Holland is, this is a step down in competition for Stephen Thompson. However, it's a correct step down in competition because I do think there is a decline on Thompson. He's 39 years old and, you know, I wouldn't say he's completely declined, but he definitely isn't the fighter that he used to be. And I think one element of his decline is the defensive wrestling. There was once upon a time where Wonderboy would just prevent takedowns. It would be very difficult to take him down and even harder to hold him down. But even though, like I said, his last two opponents have been specialists in those areas where Thompson is deficient in his MMA game, you know, there is a slight decline there. In regards to the striking, though, I still think the striking's there, the speed's there, the movement's there. And against Kevin Holland, it's going to be those attributes that are going to be needed to really shine through, because I do think that this fight is going to be won and lost on the feet. Now, what's interesting from Holland's perspective is he is the taller fighter. He is the longer fighter as well in regards to reach. And that's something that Stephen Thompson doesn't always get matched up with in the UFC. In fact, I don't think he's ever fought anybody with the reach of Kevin Holland. Now, Kevin Holland has also brought some power down with him into this division as well from middleweight, and those are going to be interesting attributes because I feel like Holland does have the physicality advantages. Like I said, he's taller, he's longer, I think he's got more power, but I think Stephen Thompson is got the technical striking advantages in this fight, the speed, the movement, the switching of stances, the being able to slide in and out of range, landing effortlessly. As long as Wonderboy isn't having to deal with someone coming at him wrestling hard, I really think he can open up and flourish. And listen, we saw Wonderboy against a hard-hitting Jeff Neal take those shots. We saw Wonderboy against a hard-hitting Luque and take those shots. So I don't think, you know, the power, even though Holland has been looking good, I don't think the power is as big of an advantage in this fight as what it would be against maybe another opponent, a lesser opponent. And again, talking of lesser opponents, like even Means and Cowboy Oliveira, Alex Oliveira, gave Kevin Holland issues early in their fights. And although props to Holland, he came back and finished both of those guys, I just feel like if he's getting hit by those guys, then coming up against somebody like Stephen Thompson, who even at 39 is light years ahead of both of those fighters from a striking perspective, I do think that Stephen Thompson is going to be able to really flourish in this fight. I think unless Kevin Holland really does land something that knocks Wonderboy out, which there's a possibility of for sure, like I've already mentioned with the power, I do feel like this fight is more geared towards Stephen Wonderboy Thompson because, like I said, I think Wonderboy has got the striking advantage in regards to the technical ability. I think the bigger cage helps him here. I think five rounds, Wonderboy's style is built for five rounds, whereas Kevin Holland, we've seen him slow down in round threes before, obviously starts really good as well. But then with Holland, you've got that playful type of fighter in there as well. Because he's going to be standing in front of somebody that's going to be moving and wants to strike with him, is he going to bring out that showman in himself, which personally I don't like because I think it's a deficit to his game in regards to how he handles himself in the cage once he does start to be a little bit playful in there. I just feel that there's a lot going on in this fight. I think it's a close fight. I think it's one of those that if it does go to a decision, then you know it could be like 2-2 going into the fourth or something like that. But I just feel that everything surrounding Stephen Thompson, he's fought the better level of competition, the bigger cage, the five rounds, the striking advantage in this fight, and he's not necessarily going to have to worry about a fighter being relentless with the wrestling and the grappling. It does lean me towards Wonderboy, so for those reasons, I'm picking Stephen Thompson to win this fight. And in the next fight, in the co-main event, we've got Rafael Dos Anjos versus Brian Barberena. And Rafael Dos Anjos is a massive favourite in this fight at like minus 550. And I kind of get it. I feel like Brian Barberena's a decent fighter. I think he's still going to cause problems. I think he's still going to be able to walk through shots. I think he's still going to land good volume. But the problem is, for Brian Barberena to be competitive with these guys that are a better level of competition than himself, which is where I believe RDA is, he's got to force these kind of fighters that are better than him to come down to his level, to make fights ugly, to brawl, to get into wild exchanges. And that's where Barberena is going to be able to flourish because that's his style. His style's dirty, ugly, gritty, grindy. You know, he's got a well-rounded style as well, and he'll just mix everything up inside the cage and just, like I said, just make things ugly and get into brawls, and that gives himself opportunities to start looking good in his fights. But against Rafael Dos Anjos, I think RDA is much smarter than that. RDA is not going to be coaxed into a brawl, and I think that from a mixed martial arts perspective, he's a better, I think RDA is a better striker, he's a better wrestler, he's a better grappler, and I feel like that's why we're seeing the minus 550 line, because although in a brawl, Brian Barberena would have every chance of looking good against RDA, I just don't think the fight's going to play out like that. I think RDA is going to manage distance well. I think he's going to chop down the lead leg of Barberena. I think he's going to be sliding in and out, landing shots. And if Barberena does try and be aggressive and get too close, then RDA can just level change into a takedown. I think he'll be able to take Barberena down without too many issues. And then obviously topside, I think he'd slice through him like a hot knife through butter. So I'm finding it really difficult outside of that puncher's chance, which, you know, every mixed martial artist has, especially in the UFC. Everybody hits hard when it comes to a 4-ounce glove if that punch hits in the right place. So Barberena's got that possibility of landing something that knocks RDA out, but again, I feel like not only is it a low percentage probability, I also think there's a small window of opportunity there as well for Barberena to do that. So all in all, I think it's a tough fight for him, and I'm picking Rafael Dos Anjos to win this fight. And talking of relatively sized favourites, we've got Mateus Nicolau versus Matt Schnell. And again, I think the bookies have got this one right. I think the line movement from the public is in the right direction as well, because all the money's been on Nicolau. And although Matt Schnell's exciting, you know, it's really tough to put this dude out. He'll never quit on himself. And especially last time out, you know, he looked absolutely phenomenal after he didn't look so phenomenal. So, like I said, Schnell's got no quitting him. He's, again, a well-rounded fighter. His striking's really fast. His grappling's really sharp. But the problem is, Nicolau, I feel, is just on a completely different level. His striking, I don't think that he's going to be as fast as Schnell. I think this is where Schnell's going to have good advantages in this fight with the speed. But I think the quality of the striking from Nicolau is there. I think the wrestling offensively, Nicolau could really lean on that here. And if Nicolau's on top of Schnell, I don't see Schnell locking in any triangle or arm bars or sweeping Nicolau. Nicolau's a high-level black belt himself in jiu-jitsu. So I think that, again, Schnell might just be outgunned in this fight wherever the fight goes. And for me, the path to victory for Schnell, like I say, keep the fight on the feet, keep your distance, slide in and out of range, and use your hand speed, throw 2 to 3 or even 4 punch combinations at Nicolau, because, like I said, that punching speed is a serious advantage for Schnell, but there's more to mixed martial arts and there's more to a high-level fight than just having an advantage with your striking speed. And that's where I think Nicolau is going to pull away in this fight. Like I said, I think from a technical striking perspective, Nicolau's got more tools. I think the offensive wrestling of Nicolau's going to be there. If Schnell decides to offensively wrestle, I feel Nicolau's defensive wrestling is better than the offensive wrestling of Schnell. And then when they hit the mat, I think that Nicolau topside is more... there's more probability of Nicolau being on top of Schnell for longer periods than Schnell on top of Nicolau. And I think the offensive jiu-jitsu of Nicolau is going to completely nullify the defensive jiu-jitsu of Schnell. And that's going to allow Nicolau, again, just to pull away in with the fight. And it's another path to victory for Nicolau should he need it. So all in all, again, I feel like it's a difficult fight for Schnell. Not one that I'd be completely shocked if he managed to pull it off, but a difficult fight nonetheless. And for that reason, I'm picking Mateus Nicolau to win this fight. And in the next fight in the heavyweight division, we've got Tai Tuivasa versus Sergey Pavlovich, and somebody is getting knocked out in this fight. And to be honest with you, it could be either of them. You know, they both hit super hard. They're both durable. You know, Pavlovich has been in there now with Derek Lewis. And Derek Lewis hits hard. Tai Tuivasa just coming off that fight with Cyril Gane, where he almost knocked Gane out as well after, you know, seemingly getting pieced up for the majority of the fight. But I feel like Pavlovich is a bit of a dark horse in this division, and I still feel that we haven't seen all of his developed game. Obviously, he's gone multiple rounds outside the UFC, but I feel like as a youngish fighter, I feel he's developed and improved over that time whilst he's been in the UFC. But because he keeps starching dudes early, I feel like we've just not seen that development in his game. So it'll be interesting to see if this fight does get stretched a little bit longer, but ultimately I just don't think it's going to. Tai Tuivasa hits hard himself, so you can't really write Tuivasa out, because again, we've seen Tuivasa knock guys like Derek Lewis out completely cold. And we've also seen Tai Tuivasa get hit hard by guys like Lewis. We've seen him get hit hard by Cyril Gane. We've not really seen Pavlovich in too much trouble apart from when Overeem knocked him out. So there is some interesting aspects of this fight. But ultimately, like I say, I think that Pavlovich's hand speed, I think his technical striking is just edging over Tai Tuivasa. I think Tuivasa's more of a brawler, winging hook, slightly slower movement, whereas Pavlovich is more straight to the point, straight punches down the middle, and develops a lot of speed in those straight punches as well, which hit first over winging punches. So again, I feel like you've got a slight speed advantage for Pavlovich. I think the power is great on both sides, so it's only going to take one from either fighter to put the other one out. So the speed and the movement of Pavlovich, I think, is going to be the slight edges in this fight, and those are the edges that are going to lean me to picking Pavlovich to win the fight, because in a fight where it only takes one, the fighter that's faster, that's slightly more technical with the straighter punches, is the more likely fighter to find that win. So for those reasons, I'm picking Sergey Pavlovich to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is a fight that's short noticed for one fighter. We've got Jack Hermanson, who's supposed to have been fighting Derek Brunson. And that was actually a really good fight as well in the top of the, well, at the top of the middleweight division. But now we've got Jack Hermanson versus Roman Dolidze. And I think it's an easier fight for Jack Hermanson for sure here. And listen, there's no disrespect to Roman Dolidze. I love this dude. I've cashed him a couple of times, including last time out as an underdog against Philip Hawes as well. So I really like Roman Dolidze. But stylistically, again, it's a tough fight. It's also a fight where he's massively stepping up in competition. And normally where Dolidze's got advantages over his opponents is being able to land something hard and clean more often than not, so just being able to land on his opponent but then landing those hard shots, and then also the grappling advantage, because Dolidze is a very, very good grappler, again, as we saw in the Philip Hawes fight. But the thing is, Jack Hermanson is also a very good grappler, he's also a good wrestler, he's also a good striker. He's one of these fighters that at the minute it does seem like he's a bit of a gatekeeper, and I hate to use that phrase, but I don't think it's a disrespectful phrase if you're, you know, describing it in the right way. And I think that Jack O'Manson's at the top of the division, but I don't think he's ever going to win a UFC title. However, he's hanging around with and can still hang with the best fighters in the world. So if you can't beat Jack O'Manson, then you're not going to be on your way to a title shot, is the where I'm seeing he's a gatekeeper type of fighter. And with Roman Dolidze, I think for Dolidze to have real advantages in this fight, he's got to get on top of Hermanson. But again, if he does get on top of Hermanson, I don't think it's going to be very easy keeping him down. And I just don't think he's going to be able to roll on Hermanson like he's been able to do with lesser competition. You know, fighters that aren't nearing the top of the division. And even with that, in my opinion, being a problem for Dolidze, the other issue is he's got to actually get Hermanson down, and I think Hermanson's just the better wrestler, both offensively and defensively. And I actually think Hermanson could potentially take Roman Dolidze down, especially if Dolidze's winging big bombs at Hermanson. Sure, one could catch, but again, I'll go on to the striking in a minute, and I think Hermanson will be able to take Dolidze down if he wants to. And we have seen Dolidze stuck on his back at times, looking for submissions, shouting to his coach, "Do you want me to submit him now, coach?" And ultimately not being able to do it. So I think there's an issue with Dolidze in the wrestling and grappling here. But then when you look at the striking, I think Jack O'Manson's more fluid, he's more varied, he's got more tools in his toolbox, more weapons in his arsenal on the feet. I think he's a little bit faster. I think he's going to have slightly better movement. And unless Dolidze does land that one big shot that knocks him out, but again, O'Manson's got decent durability as well. I just think it's a tough fight for Dolidze, wherever you look at the fight, from striking, wrestling, grappling perspective. And, you know, that's not to say Dolidze can't win. Maybe he's making, you know, stellar developments and improvements from fight to fight. But I think Jack O'Manson's going to be something that, obviously, Dolidze was never, ever going to turn down, because it's a phenomenal opportunity, if he does beat Hermanson, to have Hermanson as a win on his record. What that would do to Dolidze in his UFC career in regards to boosting him up to the next level. I understand why he's taken the fight, but I ultimately think that he's biting off a little bit more than he can chew here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jack O'Manson to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Eric Anders versus Kyle Dorcus, which for me is one of the more difficult fights to predict on the card, because you've got Eric Anders who, again, I'm just not sure where he is. You know, the only fighter he's beaten in his last five is Darren Stewart, and Darren Stewart is obviously now in Cage Warriors outside the UFC. You know, going back to Cage Warriors is never the right step for a fighter. You normally go from Cage Warriors to the UFC. But then he went to Cage Warriors and then lost his first fight back in Cage Warriors comfortably and convincingly as well. So Eric Anders is a difficult one, and again, he's a fighter that can look absolutely amazing on his night, but then he's also a fighter that can get turned over a little bit as well. And I kind of feel like Dorcus isn't too far off that as well. Like, there's some fights he looks great, and, you know, other fights where, you know, he's looked great in his last couple of fights, and you expect him to walk through his next guy, but then he puts on a weird performance, or he doesn't look quite as good. And there's a little bit of uncertainty, and I feel, in both of these fighters. So it's really difficult to be completely accurate and confident when it comes to a prediction, because ultimately we don't know exactly what we're going to get from either fighter. For me, Dorcus, he's tall, he's long, he's got a decent fundamental striking game, whereas Eric Anders, he's more dynamic as a striker, he wings big power as well, and I feel like he uses more tools with the low kicks and, like I say, just aggression, forward pressure. And there's a real difference in the striking here, because, like I say, I think Dorcus likes to keep things just nice and technical and at his own pace, and Eric Anders won't allow for that. But then Dorcus has got a really good grappling game, and I feel like the wrestling side maybe leans on the side of Anders. But is Anders going to want to take Dorcus down, knowing that Dorcus is a decent grappler? But then Dorcus has been controlled with him on his back. You know, Dorcus can be dangerous off his back for the first few minutes, but when a submission doesn't find itself, he can look a little lost, like he's tried to find what he needs to find and not being able to find it, if that makes sense. So there's just, it's just a really interesting fight, and I feel like it's a really close fight. But ultimately, I am looking at the side of Dorcus here, and the reason being is I feel like if there is any developments in the game, it's Dorcus. If there is any consistency between both fighters, it's more likely to be Dorcus that's slightly more consistent. And again, he has performed well against guys like Kevin Holland and Brendan Allen. So he's been up there with some good guys as well. Whereas Eric Anders, I'm just a little bit more unsure about Anders than I am of Dorcas, if that makes sense. So I feel like the fundamental striking, Eric Anders could be a problem early in this fight for Dorcas. But I think if Dorcas does weather a storm, if he has to weather a storm, then I think Dorcas will be the better fighter the longer the fight goes on. Whereas I think Eric Anders will fade a little bit more the longer the fight goes on. Eric Anders, I don't feel, has a plan B here with the wrestling, because if he does wrestle Dorcas, I feel like Dorcas can be dangerous off his back or sweep and reverse. And if Dorcas gets on top of Anders, that's a real problem for Eric Anders as well. That's a big gap in skill for me, you know, with Dorcas' offensive jiu-jitsu versus Anders' defensive jiu-jitsu. So with everything put together, with all things considered, I am picking Kyle Dorcas to win this fight. And in the next fight, this one should be a banger in my opinion. We've got Nico Price versus Philip Rowe. And it's crazy that there's only a year between these two fighters in regards to age. Philip Rowe, 1 year younger. And even in experience, there's, from a record numbers perspective, there's not that much between them either. But obviously Nico Price has been around at the top of the game for much longer. He started MMA a little bit earlier than Philip Rowe as well. And obviously Price has got that level of competition edge over Philip Rowe because he's fought some of the best guys in the division. But what comes with that, with Price's fighting style, is Price has obviously got a lot of mileage on him as a fighter. You know, he's durability, again, it's always been there, but at some point that's going to crack. And when you've been in that many wars as Nico Price has been in, at some point that durability is going to come into play. And I'm not saying it's going to be this fight, but what I'm saying is Price has been in a lot of wars, taking a lot of damage, and I feel that that's a benefit to Phil Rowe in this fight. And Phil Rowe, I think, is a fighter that, like I said, even though he's only a year younger than Price, I think Rowe's got a lot more mileage left in him. I feel like Rowe's actually probably still developing and improving as a fighter. And I feel like we're going to see a better Phil Rowe every time we see him inside the cage for the next few fights at least. As for how this fight plays out, it's going to be really interesting because from a striking perspective, Rowe's tall, he's long, he's got good straight punches, he's got a good check left hook as well. Nico Price is aggressive, walks forwards, will eat shots to land shots. But the thing is, what Price has got to be careful of in this fight is Rowe's got real deceptive power, in my opinion. And you can see that because when he strikes, you don't think that it's got the biggest power behind them. But then he is hurting guys, he is rocking guys and knocking guys out. So you've got to be really mindful of closing the distance against Rowe in regards to your discipline, because if you've got no awareness of your defensive striking as you're closing the distance, then you are going to get cracked by him. Now, when you're looking at the wrestling and grappling, I think Nico Price has probably got the better wrestling, and I think he's the more likely fighter to wrestle. But Phil Rowe is training with guys like Rodolfo Vieira, and Phil Rowe's a black belt now in jiu-jitsu himself. So I think that Rowe's not going to be too fussed if Price wants to take him down. Price has got a decent top game himself. But also, if Phil Rowe can reverse and sweep, which he has been known to do in the UFC, then we've also seen Price lose a full round after just winning a full round against Alex Cowboy Oliveira. You know, Price went out there, did a good job against Oliveira round one, took him down, laid on top of him. The second round, Oliveira took him down and Price couldn't do anything. And I feel like there's, again, when we're talking of inconsistencies, there's a little bit of inconsistency with Price. I bet Price against Cowboy Oliveira thinking he was going to smoke him, and the fight was much closer than what I wanted it to be for the price I paid, no pun intended, and also for how I thought the fight was going to play out. So I think it's a fight here where you've got a taller, longer striker in Phil Rowe, susceptible maybe to getting knocked out with the forward pressure and aggression from Price. But then if the fight hits the mat, then I think that Phil Rowe's got good advantages in the jiu-jitsu. On the feet, like I said, I think Rowe's going to be able to hang with Price, and he'll probably start slow, as he always does, and Price will probably start fast, as he always does. But then I feel like Phil Rowe could build into this fight, even if he does lose that first round. And I feel like Rowe's going to have opportunities to land hard on Price. I think Rowe's going to have opportunities, if the fight hits the mat, to do good work on top of Price as well. And there's also a chance that Price starts to feel a little bit outgunned in this fight wherever the fight goes. I think it's going to be a close fight. I think that, like I said, the forward pressure and aggression of Price, along with the power, and he does have some good topside grappling. Again, I'm not sure that grappling's going to be enough, but I think Price as a fighter and who he's fought, the level of competition he's fought, this is a big step down in competition for him. And I feel like because of that, he is going to pose a lot of problems to Phil Rowe, because this is a big step up in competition for Rowe, and it could potentially look like a step up too far if the fight goes a certain way. But I think that Phil Rowe is going to be able to hold his own. I think that Rowe is going to be developing and improving from fight to fight, and I do think that the tall, long, rangy game of Rowe is going to be good here in the bigger cage in Orlando, Florida. And although, like I've already said, it could be a really close fight, it could be really back and forth, both fighters will have the moments, one fighter has to get their arm raised at the end of the night, I am going to be slightly edging and siding with Philip Rowe to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Angela Hill versus Emily Ducote. And Emily Ducote in her last fight actually looked really good, you know, an impressive performance, dominant performance against Jessica Penne. But the only problem with that performance is the fact that it was against Jessica Penne, and she is aging, she is edging towards the end of her career. So I don't mean any disrespect to Penne. Every fighter goes that way, and there's absolutely nothing that anybody can do about it. But the fact is, she's got Angela Hill in front of her this time and not Jessica Penne. And that's where things are going to get much tougher for Emily Ducote. And like I say, yes, she looked great in her last fight, but Angela Hill really only loses to the top of the division, at least over the last couple of years anyway. All the fighters that have beaten her have been fighters in and around that, you know, title shot, that top three of the division. And although we don't know the ceiling of Emily Ducote, we will absolutely know the ceiling after this fight. But that's the problem. Like, if you're wanting to bet Emily Ducote, you're going to have to pay to find out if she's going to be in and around that top of the division in, you know, like 12 to 18 months time. And not only are you paying for it, you're also paying the juice as well, because she is the favorite and not the underdog. So I kind of feel that until we see her against Angela Hill, we're not going to know. And pre-fight, obviously these breakdowns in the podcast is all pre-fight, you have to lean towards Angela Hill because she's fought the better level of competition. She beats the women in and around where Emily Ducote is right now. And she's a tough fight for any fighter. I mean, you know, outstriking her is going to be difficult because of her Thai background. And, you know, she's fast. Her movement's good. And when I say she's fast, her speed is within the movement and her striking speed as well. She's got a variety of different attacks, kicks, punches, combinations. Her cardio will go for days. And if you try to wrestle her, she's got decent defensive wrestling. You can get her down, but again, it's not easy to keep her down. She can get back up to her feet. And it's a little bit like hell on wheels for these up-and-coming fighters like Emily Ducote. And similar to what I said with Jack Hermanson, you know, Angela Hill's not going to be a champion inside the UFC. She's just not. However, she's in and around that top of the division. And if you want to make your way up to the championship area, into the rankings, then you've got to be able to beat her. And if you don't, then, you know, you need to go back and reassess and restart. And I feel like Angela Hill might just be a little bit too much for Emily Ducote in this fight. I think Ducote is going to have a moment. I think it's going to be a close fight. It's always these types of fights in the women's divisions as well that end up being so close, split decision types of fights, fights where it gets to a decision and, you know, we're looking around thinking this could go either way and we've got no idea how the judges are going to score it. But from a pick perspective, pre-fight pick, I'm going to be siding with Angela Hill to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Clay Guida versus Scott Holtzman. Now, Scott Holtzman's a weird one. I've been looking for interviews to see where he's been. You know, he's been out of action for a while. I've had a look at his Instagram. Can't really see any, you know, sort of injury or anything that would give any hint or reason to why he's been out so long. I'm sure somebody listening to this is going to have an answer and pop it in the comments. And, you know, if you do know, then yeah, please drop it in the comments because it'd be interesting to know. I don't know whether he's just taking a little bit of time off. I've seen that, you know, he's been doing a little bit of coaching as well. So whether he's had his focus elsewhere just whilst he's just having a bit of a reset, then maybe that's the case. But Scott Holtzman's not a young guy, so I can't see him taking time off to, you know, develop and improve his game at the age he's at. And again, there's no disrespect there. I just feel that, you know, at that sort of age, you're more often than not a finished product. And when I say a finished product, I mean a fighter that's not developing and improving rapidly like a younger fighter would. But in this fight against Clay Guida, I actually don't think it's a bad fight for Holtzman. There is a little bit of uncertainty from my perspective because I don't know where he's been and what he's been doing and why he's been out for so long. But Clay Guida, even though Guida's still fun, and his movement's still good and he's still that crazy Clay Guida that we've known for years and years now in the UFC, he does still have issues competing against really tough, durable guys. And that's what we've got in Scott Holtzman here. Scott Holtzman's a fighter that's decent from a well-rounded perspective in regards to his MMA game. Then you've got Clay Guida. Again, if Clay Guida can wrestle against opponents, then that's where I feel that Guida has a lot of success at this point in his career. Just standing there, moving in and out and striking with him, it's always going to make fights close, at least, because Guida's hittable as he's coming in, even though he's got this funky, strange movement. But the thing is with Scott Holtzman, he's a bit of a meat and potatoes guy. And what I mean by that is, what you see is what you get. He's very stern. He doesn't do anything flashy, but he does everything really good. And I feel that's where Clay Guida's going to get a little bit stuck in this fight, because he's going to have that crazy movement coming in and out of range. But I think Scott Holtzman's just going to hold his ground. He's not going to let that movement and the speed phase him. I think Holtzman as well, if he wanted to get a hold of Guida, I think he's going to be slightly bigger, slightly stronger, slightly more physical. I think he might be able to get takedowns if he's on top of Guida. Guida might get up a couple of times. But again, Guida gives his back a lot when standing back up to his feet. So can Scott Holtzman use his jiu-jitsu, potentially get on the back of Guida? I think Holtzman's physicality, his strength, and his presence, strong presence inside the cage, is going to be enough here to be able to at least make this fight close, again, at the very least. But I think Holtzman, if it's the Holtzman that we've seen against, for example, Jim Miller, for example, moving forwards, landing hard shots, and just being a stern body inside the cage, then I think Guida's going to have trouble. If Holtzman's had some injury issues and the layoff has been a layoff that he wasn't anticipating, that he didn't want, and that he has digressed and maybe declined a little bit, then Guida might have some more success in this fight. But ultimately, I have to go on what I'm seeing from tape from the last time we saw Holtzman, and I do think that if Holtzman's fighting up the division, he's going to struggle at this point. But the Clay Guidas of the world, I think he'd be able to look good against. So for those reasons, I'm picking Scott Holtzman to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got a good fight here, a fun fight. I'm not sure why it's this low down on the card. Maybe there'll be a bout reorder. But we've got Michael Johnson versus Mark Diakese. And again, this is a really fun fight. Mark Diakese versus Johnson. Listen, Diakese's been looking like he's from Dagestan in Russia with the way he's been, you know, throwing and ragdolling these opponents around. The wrestling's look phenomenal. It's on point. He's still developing as a fighter as well. He's improving from fight to fight. We've seen that. And not only has the wrestling developed and come a long way, because let's not forget, Mark is, his background is in striking. You know, it's the wrestling that is developed over, you know, a period of time. And I feel like, although his wrestling's developed, he's also developing as a fighter. The fight IQ's there. He's choosing the right game plans. He's fighting in the right way. You know, against Vyacheslav Borshev, he's a seriously good kickboxer. I actually thought Mark could have competed quite comfortably with him on the feet, but he decided just to take that easy path to victory. You know, the path to victory that's there and presenting itself. The same thing with Hadjovic. He was landing hard on Hadjovic. He probably could have knocked him out. But again, he took the path to victory, and this is smart for a fighter that is now a veteran in the UFC, that's developing, that's making his way up the rankings. There's a price to pay for going to war with fighters, and that's getting caught and getting knocked out. And I feel like Mark's just not that fighter. He's a fighter that's smart, that's fighting the way he needs to in order to win, to make his way up the ranking, to have and give himself a title run in the UFC. And that's going to pay dividends in the long run, in my opinion. But again, against Michael Johnson, he's going to have a different opponent than what he's had against Hadjovic and Vyacheslav Borshev, because Michael Johnson is a decent wrestler himself. I don't think Mark's going to be able to go in there, and I don't think he's going to have it easy against Michael Johnson wrestling him. I think he can, and especially the longer the fight goes on, I think the wrestling's going to open up a little bit for Mark. But in the early moments, I think Michael Johnson's movement, the sprawl speed's going to be there, and I feel like Mark might have to come back and lean more on his striking in this fight than he will a wrestling approach, again, especially early on in the fight. And again, like I've already mentioned, remember, Mark was a striker first. So I feel that Mark does have to be a little bit careful with Johnson's hand speed, especially inside boxing range. His hand speed's phenomenal. I don't think it's just Mark that has to be careful of that. I genuinely think that Johnson's hand speed and his boxing, that how fast his boxing is with his combinations, I feel like that's probably one of the fastest still in the entire division. Even when you're looking at the top of the division, the hand speed is just lightning fast. So that's definitely something that Mark has got to be careful of in this fight. But that doesn't mean Mark can't go toe-to-toe with him, because I think that Mark's a fast, dynamic striker who's effective, efficient as well. And I like the fact that from a striking perspective, Mark's going to be more efficient in more ranges, because from the outside, Mark's going to be able to kick in. When you come in just into the side to the kicking range, in between the boxing and kicking range, I think Mark's going to be able to kick in there. I think he's going to be able to use his length to throw fundamentals out there with his hands, put combinations together. Inside boxing range, I'd give maybe the slight edge to Johnson there, but again, I don't think Mark's going to be a fish out of water inside that boxing range. So from a Rangers perspective, I like Mark in this fight from the striking perspective. Then when the longer the fight goes on, I think the wrestling's going to be there. Then if he's not letting go of Johnson and he's just ragdolling him about, I think Mark's jiu-jitsu is night and day above where Michael Johnson's jiu-jitsu is. So if Mark can get Johnson down, I think he'll be able to hold him down once he's settled Johnson on the mat, put him on his back. I don't think Johnson is going to have an easy time getting back up to his feet. I definitely don't think he's a submission threat off his back or a sweep or reversal threat. So I think there's a big gap in skill in the jiu-jitsu here for me. Mark's offensive jiu-jitsu versus the defensive jiu-jitsu of Johnson specifically. And then the wrestling's on Mark's side. Again, like I've already said, the later the fight goes on. And from a striking perspective, I feel like, although it's going to be close, Mark's better at more ranges. So for those reasons, I'm picking Mark Dicasey to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Darren Elkins versus Jonathan Pierce. And I think that, I'd hate saying this, but I'm just not sure how long Darren Elkins has got left in the UFC. I think that he's fighting a fighter here that ain't going to be turned over very easy, that isn't going to be run through, that's durable, that's scrappy, that's good everywhere. And I kind of feel like it's a bit of a nightmare fight for Darren Elkins at the minute. And by the way, this is a fighter that is relatively young, that is still developing, that has got his entire career ahead of him. And again, from an age, mileage perspective, you know, Elkins, there's a reason he's got damage written across it, tattooed across his chest. You know, he's taken so much damage. He loves being in those wars. And it's normally those wars against a certain opponent or certain opponents that he can look good against. But I just don't think he's going to go in here and out-wrestle Pierce. I don't think he's going to go here. And even if he does take Pierce down, I don't think he's going to be able to control him from a jiu-jitsu perspective. I think on the feet, they're both going to happily stand toe-to-toe and go to war. And again, that absolutely benefits Jonathan Pierce. I don't see any benefit in that for Darren Elkins, because he's just going to get absolutely mullered if he stands in wild exchanges with Jonathan Pierce. But then if Pierce starts mixing in some wrestling as well, which is possible, you know, I don't think he's going to have a ton of success from a grappling perspective once the takedown's hit. But again, it's just something else that Pierce can do if the brawls aren't something he wants. But like I said, I think it's a tough fight. I don't think Elkins is going to run through Pierce. I don't think Elkins is going to bully Pierce. I don't necessarily think Elkins is going to be like light and night and day stronger than Pierce either, which again is another aspect of Elkins' game where he can have advantages over his opponent. The physicality in the wrestling, you know, keeping your grip and not allowing your opponent to break your grip and constantly taking them down. Just don't see that with Jonathan Pierce. I think it's a tough fight for Elkins when you look at this fight across every aspect of a mixed martial arts fight. So for those reasons, I'm picking Jonathan Pierce to win this fight. And going back to the razor close fights, we've got Tracy Cortez versus Amanda Ribas. Again, I think this is a really well-matched fight. Amanda Ribas, for me, is taking the right step down, the correct step down in competition. And Tracy Cortez is getting a rightful step up in competition. And this is where both ladies meet in that crossfire. From a striking perspective, I feel like Tracy Cortez is still a work in progress with the striking. Even though they're roughly around the same age, they've roughly got the same amount of experience, I think that Amanda Ribas isn't as developing as what Tracy Cortez is. Now, if you're asking me right now who the better striker is, I'd say Amanda Ribas. I'd have to, based on what I've seen, you know, rather than making assumptions that may or may not be there. But what I will say is just don't be surprised if Cortez does look a little bit better from a striking perspective. She's training at Fight Ready MMA, guys like Eddie Char, and, you know, her boxing is going to be improving from fight to fight. Then you look at the wrestling. I think that the wrestling is definitely on the side of Cortez. I kind of feel that the grappling might edge towards Hibas. So you've got the striking that might be quite close. Cortez might be developing. Hibas might have the slight edges. Then you've got the wrestling, which I think is sided with Cortez, but the jiu-jitsu sided with Hibas. Now, what Hibas is going to need for her jiu-jitsu edge to play out in this fight is for her to be on top. And if Cortez is the one that's having the dominant wrestling exchanges, then she's more likely to get on top of Hibas than the other way around. And this is where the fight gets really close and really technical from an analytic perspective, because I believe that the fight could be won and lost in those wrestling and grappling scenarios, because I just don't see Cortez not shooting takedowns unless she's absolutely lighting Hibas up on the feet. And I just don't think she's going to be lighting her up on the feet because it's going to be that close. So I do think that the fight is going to be close. I think it could be one of those fights where we're looking at the end of the fight and the decision's a little bit unsure, and both fighters have done good work and had good moments. But because of Cortez's wrestling advantage, in my opinion, we've seen Hibas taken down. We've seen Jan Jehova completely nullify Hibas on Hibas's back with her on top. I feel like Cortez could adopt a similar sort of game plan here. I think the blueprint is out there of Hibas, but again, I just don't think it's going to be completely dominant from Cortez. It's just when I'm looking at the small percentages, the small edges, I do think that Cortez has got that slightly more dominant stylistic advantage in this fight against Hibas. So for those reasons, I'm picking Tracy Cortez to win this fight. In the next fight, this could be fun. We've got Natan Levy versus Gennaro Valdez. Gennaro Valdez, absolutely hell on wheels. If you haven't watched his UFC debut, his last fight, go onto UFC Fight Pass and watch it. The dude's insane. You know, he's almost like a zombie. You can't knock him out. He just kept on getting dropped and getting back up. And he just chose violence that morning when he woke up. So against Natan Levy, it's going to be a slightly different fight, because I don't think Natan Levy is going to give him that brawl, those wild exchanges. Natan Levy's got the karate background, not that you see too much of it, but his kicking game is decent. Where Natan Levy is looking actually pretty good is in regards to his wrestling and his takedowns and his grappling, his topside grappling specifically, and I feel like he's gonna have to lean on that in this fight. However, because Natan Levy's background is in karate, I don't think that his gas tank is that suited for wrestling. And the reason I say that is because he slows down massively in every fight that we've seen in the UFC. He wrestles early, does some good work, but then his gas tank just seems to evade him a little bit the longer the fight goes on. And this is maybe somewhere where Valdez can potentially look to capitalize. If Valdez does reserve some of his cardio in his gas tank early on himself, and Levy dominates round one and comes out in round two looking good, but then starts slowing down, maybe Valdez can take over then. But I kind of feel that with Natan Levy, I feel like as long as he doesn't get into a brawl with Valdez, I think his striking will be okay here. I think he'll be able to land some good shots. I think he's a fighter that is still going to be developing and improving as well. He's got a lot of miles on the clock left to give. I think the wrestling and the grappling could be a factor. I just worry about Levy, you know, sort of round three, especially if Valdez is fresh. Then Natan Levy, you know, it could get pretty scary for him. But other than that, I am siding with Levy to win the fight. So for those reasons, I'm picking Natan Levy to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got a UFC debutant, Francis Marshall, fighting Marcelo Rojo. And again, this is an interesting fight. I kind of feel like, obviously, Francis Marshall's coming from the Dana White Contender Series. His boxing looks sharp. And even though he's got decent striking, decent boxing, the majority of his wins are actually via rear naked choke. So for one reason or another, he always ends up into that position where he's on the mat, and his wrestling doesn't look super strong. And this is why I'm saying, for one reason or another, the fight ends up on the mat and somehow he ends up getting a rear naked choke, even though, like I said, his wrestling could still use some work. The thing is with Francis Marshall, I feel like he's still pretty green and pretty raw. Yes, he had a great Contender Series fight, but he was fighting another fighter that was very similar to his level, both experience and, again, record. But with Marcelo Rojo, I don't think Rojo's a fighter that is going to start lighting up the division, but Rojo's a tough as shit fighter. Like, Rojo will come forwards, he'll take shots, he'll eat shots, and he's got a very well-rounded game. And I kind of feel like because Rojo's got that forward pressure, the aggression and speed, and I kind of feel like with Francis Marshall, he is better served in fights where he can dictate the pace and the range of the fight. And when he's that guy that's dictating that pace of the fight, he can really slow things down for himself. He can pick his shots. He can look good. He can land his combinations. More importantly, he can make his reads. But with Rojo, he just ain't going to have that at all. Rojo's going to come forwards. He's going to get in the face of Marshall. The reads are going to be a little bit tougher for Marshall because Rojo's like a little bit hell on wheels, to be fair. So I don't think Marshall's going to have that beneficial advantage in this fight where he's going to be able to dictate what happens and dictate when the action takes place and how it takes place. And because of that, I think that Rojo is going to be able to capitalize on the exchanges. I think he is going to put Marshall into uncomfortable situations that I don't think Marshall will have dealt with in his career to date. And I do think Marshall might end up falling short on the night because of that. From a technical perspective, I think Marshall's better, but the stylistic aspect, along with that forward pressure, along with the experience, not only from a numbers on your record, but level of competition as well, I'm going to have to side with Rojo here. So for those reasons, I'm picking Marcelo Rojo to win this fight. And finally, the last breakdown of this event, we've got Yasmin Haruge versus Estela Nunes. And Haruge is a really exciting prospect, you know, in the UFC debut against Lucinda. I think that was a fireworks fight. It was a great showing from both ladies. Both ladies have got serious ability. They're still both developing. They're still going to be able to, you know, put on some good shows moving forwards. But Estela Nunes, although that I think that she's going to be gaming this fight, she's definitely not going to back down from a fight. I just feel like she is outgunned by Haruge. From a striking perspective, I think Haruge is a better technical striker, but I also think she's a little bit quicker. She's a little bit more physical. She'll be in your face, that forward pressure. I think the combinations, the volume's going to be there for Haruge as well. And then when you're starting to look at the wrestling and the grappling, I think that although the fight is more than likely going to be won and lost on the feet, if you are looking at a wrestling and grappling perspective, I think that Haruge is going to be better than where Estela Nunes is as well. I think Estela Nunes is really sort of taking one for the team here. And again, I don't mean that disrespectfully. And if she does beat Haruge, then man, that'll be a massive pin in the balloon, you know, popping that balloon, stopping that hype train. And I think that that would then lead Nunes onto bigger and better things by a mile. But I think she's got a difficult fight ahead of her. I'm not looking past Yasmin Haruge here, who I think could be a serious problem in the division. Give her 3 or 4 more fights, let the UFC build her up the right way. I think she'll be there or thereabouts within that top 15. And I think that she'll be pushing forwards to a title run as well. I genuinely think she's that good and she's got that much potential as a prospect. So I am going to be picking Yasmin Haruge to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. Again, apologies that we've run on past 45 minutes with the breakdowns, but we've got 15 fights this weekend, so there's not a lot I can do with that. I can only break the fights down as best and as quick as I possibly can for you guys. As always, I appreciate all the support, all the likes to the YouTube videos, the subscriptions to the YouTube channel as well. We are trying to hit 100 subscribers. If you are wanting any betting advice, if you are wanting the Bayes AI UFC prediction software picks, my handicapping, official bets, fun parlays, written breakdowns, you can find all that at MMAplay365.com. And they're all really good pricing as well. You know, for one event, you've got $4.99, a month's $9.99, or a year is $99.99. And for what you get, there really is a ton of value in the betting hubs as well. So again, make sure you check that out. Don't forget, we're on all podcast platforms. Wherever you like to listen to your podcast, you can check us out wherever that is. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Amazon Music, we're on Google Podcasts as well, along with all the other small podcasting platforms. iHeartRadio is another one that we're on. So again, just make sure you check out our podcast wherever you're listening to. Give it a like, drop a comment if you can. And that's all. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.